Hi everyone, it's Kristen Fury and we're back with the 11 Health and Technologies podcast. In today's episode, we will be doing part two of our IBD episode with our guest, Amber Tresca. In the part one episode, we talked about IBD diagnosis and support. But in today's episode, we will be going over the symptoms of IBD and how to best advocate for yourself as a patient. IBD symptoms. In order to educate you all listening, we would like to bring attention to the common side effects for patients living with Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis. Some of these include stomach pain and cramps, diarrhea, weight loss, and fatigue. Those are just a couple symptoms, obviously. I'm sure that you can add to those as we go on. My first question I have for you is, does living with IBD ever get easier? What are some ways you cope or have coped with flares? And I know earlier I mentioned remission, which means no active inflammation, but I'd love to hear from you how your whole experience of 30 years of IBD has been.
Yeah, I mean, I just want to say first off that living with IBD does get easier. I think those first few years are the hardest because that learning curve is so steep. And you'll probably agree with me, almost every single patient I've ever spoken to, aside from those that have a close family member that's living with the disease, they never heard of it before they were diagnosed. So it's like a 2x4 to the face. And if you've been healthy, you know, in my case, I was ridiculously healthy. I was that kid that got the attendance award every year. I was such a nerd. And then all of a sudden, I'm spending a month in the hospital and then months at home with a tutor. And like, that's a huge adjustment. And that's being a teenager. I can't imagine what it is like to be diagnosed as an adult, as some of my friends who've been diagnosed perhaps in their 30s or later, and you're going along, you're in the prime of your life and going along with your career. And then all of a sudden, kablam, you've got this thing to deal with and you've got a whole bunch more responsibilities and things to learn, as well as the mental aspects and just learning the day to day. How do you schedule appointments? How do you talk to this medical team? How do you get your team to talk to one another? How do you get your medication? I mean, what? Specialty pharmacy? What? What is that? You know, so I mean, there's so many things and it's a huge adjustment. So it does take time. And coping with flare-ups, I mean, anybody with IBD will tell you it's you're always just waiting for that other shoe to drop, I think. And also part of it is that every flare-up is different. They come at different stages of your life. They're different in terms of symptoms, and you may need to make a change in your, I mean, obviously if you're having a flare up, you need to make some kind of a change in your care plan because it's not going to go away unless you do. But the first thing is that you always have to start with your team and you have to let them know what's going on. And, you know, it's so interesting to me. I was thinking about this today is that it would be like, okay, I get the bloody poops again. Let me call my doctor and see what he says. And now it's like, I have gotten a call from my team and they tell me something's a little off in your blood work. We may need to look into this and we may need to make a change. Like, it's so interesting how different it is that it's like we've gotten to the point where minute changes in your blood work could mean that you're starting down a path and we can just like nip that right in the bud. So it's really wonderful that that's the case. And I have achieved what we call surgical remission. So that doesn't mean that things, you know, are always perfect. There are things like the fatigue, just sometimes it's overwhelming and I've never been able to pinpoint why it starts or how to get rid of it or anything like that. Like literally all I can do is try to get more sleep, which I don't sleep well at all. And then, you know, maybe drink some coffee, which is also like not so great. You know, the fatigue is a really big problem that I don't think is ever going to leave me. And then of course there's things like after you've had surgery, like my vitamin D levels are usually low, my B12 levels are low. So, you know, there's always things that we have to keep tabs on. And again, learning all this in the beginning of your disease is really overwhelming. But then after a while it becomes a part of your life and you learn how to deal with it. And you do enough reading and you work with your team enough that you can overcome that. And then it's like, okay, I'm now in the steady state and to make a change in order to get us on the right
the right course again.
I think you explained that really well about going through diagnosis and then juggling. So I would explain, I was diagnosed at 12 and it kind of was like someone mm-hmm. knocked the wind out of me. And then I felt like I was juggling for years trying to figure out everything. And then every time I figured something out, it was like a huge victory. I just needed to tell every single person, hey, this is how you do this. And now I know. It's a funny thing, the stages you go through with this disease. You can be happy and then sad and then frustrated and then determined.
Yeah. I mean, I you know, a couple of weeks ago, somebody asked me about like the emotions that you go through. And I'm like, in an hour, in a minute, in a day? Like, where do we start with the emotions that you go through? But I think it's important to also do this trick where you acknowledge these emotions and you give them their time and their space, but then you also move on and recognize that there's things that you need to do for your health. And, you know, you get up and you do them.
I wanted to touch on your J pouch. You said after getting the J pouch, your disease had improved with the medications that you were taking. Is there anything else you'd like to add to your experience with the J pouch? Do you think overall the J pouch has really helped keep your UC, like you said, in surgical remission?
Yes, absolutely. I'm such a proponent of the J pouch. I see people online all the time who are at the point where they do need a surgical treatment for their ulcerative colitis. And in going through that, it's appropriate for your medical team to lay out all of the options available to you. And one of the options could be a J pouch for those people for whom they're a candidate for it. And they often have a lot of questions. And I feel like the poster girl for J pouches sometimes because mine has been such a resounding success. And I had my surgery in 1999. I had open surgery, by the way, which means that I have a midline scar that goes from right under my rib cage all the way down to my pelvis. So now they can do the surgery laparoscopically where you have kind of, you know, I don't know how many ways they go in, two or three, and you have just like a couple little holes, you know. So like my bikini days were over at 26, you know. So that just goes to show you that surgical advances have come so far. And so the J pouch surgery completely changed my life. I mean, first of all, had I not had surgery, I would be dead because I would have developed colon cancer and then that, or I would have developed, you know, a perforation or something because my colon was falling apart inside of me. And that would have been the end of that. So I'm so grateful for all of the knowledge. But I did have an ostomy for 3 months. That is an extremely short amount of time to have an ostomy. So I don't claim to be an expert in any respect in that way. But the funny thing was, is that when I went to have my ostomy reversed, I remember sitting there in the bed. There's certain moments in your life that you just remember just absolutely crystal clear. I mean, you know, what did I eat for breakfast this morning? I don't know. Did I eat breakfast? Good question. But like this, I remember. I remember sitting in that hospital bed, you know, and the surgical team, everyone's coming in and asking you the same questions over and over and over again, right? You know, like that's just part of how it goes. And I remember looking at my husband, which we weren't married at the time, but I remember looking at him going, what the hell am I doing? Why am I doing this? Like, I'm fine. Like, this is fine. Like, you know, I could live with the ostomy. I don't need to get reversed. I mean, it was kind of, you know, my J pouch was already created. It wouldn't have made any sense to not have the reversal at that time.
Exactly.
So of course I was going to have it. It was almost like waking up in recovery aside from the surgical pain. You could just feel the difference. Something was so different, profoundly different in your body after losing all of that inflamed tissue that was in there. So ostomy, J pouch, whatever people decide, when you get to that point, it improves your quality of life so profoundly. And I've not spoken to any patient that has said that they wished they could have held off surgery. In fact, most patients tell me that they wish that they had done it sooner. And actually, I would actually put myself in that category as well.
I agree that if I could have done the surgery, I was diagnosed at 12 and I had surgery at 19. I would happily take that surgery at 12 to have that normal lifestyle.
Right.
Advocacy. As a patient with IBD, it is important to be your own personal self-advocate. What this means is asking your medical team the right questions and providing them with your honest health update. It means taking charge of your own health and finding ways to become educated on what you can do to help. So we talked a little bit about social media and becoming involved, but I want to touch on how you became a patient advocate. Did this take time, or did you right away know that you were going to take charge of your health?
Yeah, I mean, it took so much time. I had 10 years where I was not taking charge of my health, and that is not the way to approach a complicated disease like IBD. And I also don't think I was often honest with my healthcare team. Like, I could have been more honest with them. I think if I had gone to my doctors with some of the challenges that I faced every day, things may have been different, especially in regards to going to high school and then going to college. They may have been able to help me with a lot more things. But for whatever reason, I just had this idea that I'm just going to like power through it and I'm going to handle it. So I don't know why. Don't be like me. Don't be like that. And I also thought that there wasn't a lot that could have been done to help me. But I know that that's not true. And I know now that there's things that I would have no knowledge of. And if I had gone to my care team sooner with these issues, that they would have been able to help me. But it's almost like you don't know what you don't know. And that also goes for your care team. If you're not telling them all of the ins and outs of what you're dealing with every day, they don't know how they can help you.
That's a great way to put it. I think as we go through the different experiences, we learn more and more how we could do differently. But you also learn just from hearing from your medical team. If you can help them, mm-hmm. they can help you. And that's what I've learned throughout the years, that the more I push for something that I really want, obviously I'm going to listen to their advice. They are my doctor. But if I have my mindset, hey, I really think this can help, let's try it. I need a doctor that's willing to try things exactly. for my disease. When and why did you start your podcast? So it's an exciting time. I've been wanting to talk more about this. You have a podcast called About IBD, and you talk about IBD. What are some topics you have covered, and what types of guests have you spoken with for those who don't know about your podcast?
I love talking about podcasting, especially with other podcasters, but I will talk about it with anybody, anytime, anywhere. I think, you know, people like will run away from me if they could. But I started my podcast in 2017, and I started it because I got super frustrated and I wanted a different way that I could get information out to patients. I was already writing all of the things in lots of different places, but audio was not a medium that I had been in. And so what happened was there was this research study that came out and it was getting a lot of attention. They must have hired the best PR firm on the planet because this was everywhere. People were sending it to me and then my editors brought it to me. And the thing of it was, is that when you went and read this study, it was like, great, they did this awesome research. Amazing. So glad it was done. But all of these articles kept getting written about how, but we've discovered the cause of Crohn's disease and that could lead to a cure. And then I go and read the study and I'm like, in mice, the study was in mice. So what are we talking about here? And I got super frustrated and now I don't remember if I had the microphone or if I went and bought the microphone. Could have been either way. And I sat down with my phone with this microphone and literally like yelled into it for like a half an hour. And then I went and found some music and then I released it. And that was literally how it started. I did not have a plan. I did not read about things. I was an avid podcast listener and I thought that this would be a great way to reach patients who prefer to get information through this medium rather than maybe reading everything all of the time. And so anyway, that's, you know, a couple weeks later, I found something else I wanted to yell about and, you know, released more episodes. And so I've had a lot of IBD patients on my show. Episode 68 just went up today. And we've talked about so many things. We've talked about relationships, sex, parenthood, ostomies, J-pouches, fitness, politics, like anything and everything, because IBD affects all aspects of our lives. So we talk about all aspects of our lives. And I've also had the great fortune to have some healthcare professionals come on my show, talk to me about mental health, about research, about pregnancies. So it's been almost 3 years that I've been doing my show, and I've been really lucky to have a wide variety of guests and topics. And I often say that it's really interesting because I ask someone to come on my show, and then I'm asking them about their disease journey and kind of asking them to relive some of maybe the worst moments of their life and also be recorded for other people to hear it. So it's a really interesting space to be in. But most patients want others to understand. They want people outside the IBD community to understand IBD. They want people inside of the community to understand their story and the how their story illustrates a certain aspect of how IBD is treated. And so it's been, I have such a passion for it, and it's been so transformative. And for a person who's an introvert and has spent 20 years writing outside of my home, like I'm a writer on the internet, like for a reason, but this has pushed me completely outside of my comfort zone, and it has given me so much that I can't imagine now what my life would be like without having started this journey. So thank you for asking.
Yeah, of course. I think podcasts like yours are good for more than just IBD patients. It gives family members, parents, brothers, sisters, aunts, the ability to become educated. I have my mom listen to these podcasts just so she can learn a little bit more from other people, because she's just hearing from me, and I have my friends listen. So I think that really provides information for a variety of different
completely people. And that's why I do it. And I've also been told that people in industry listen to podcasts and listen to podcasts about IBD, and that healthcare providers listen as well. They don't live with the disease, but they're in some way involved in the community, and that it helps them in a very specific way that they might not get through reading a blog, you know, but I mean, everything has its time and place, but that podcasts offer something that helps them better understand the patient journey.
I like that. I don't know if you know Dr. Neil Nandy on
yes, our podcast. He's one of my favorites. Yes. I love Dr. Nandy.
Oh my gosh, me too. He said something about it's just so important to know more about his patients. So I'm sure he's one of them who likes to hear different IBD patient stories so that it will help him with his patients to go above and beyond. And those types of doctors
absolutely
are just amazing.
Absolutely.
So
he's one
them
of the best. I keep waiting for him to like get a talk show because like he would be so good at it. So I just, you know, maybe one day.
Aside from your podcast, you are also involved with the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation. I've seen that you've spoke, I believe, for them. So tell us a little bit about your
experience. Sure. So I've been involved with the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation, you know, for as long as I've been writing. Obviously, you know, I've worked to help them get the word out about their programs. You know, like almost every IBD patient, I've done fundraising. These days, I'm, you know, so honored that I also get to participate in things like Twitter chats and Facebook live events, and gone to their annual meeting, the Crohn's and Colitis Congress, where I've been a speaker and a moderator. And so that's really been such a wonderful journey, because they have such a large platform that it helps get different patient journeys out in front of a wider group of patients, and helps them to better address their concerns with their disease and with their day-to-day lives. And not only that, but I also founded IBD Moms with my friend Brooke Abbott, who is maybe perhaps better known as a crazy Creole mommy across social media. And, mm-hmm. you know, we're on social media, and we have a website, and we also have a private Facebook group for moms who live with IBD and moms of kids who live with IBD. And we started the group because we found that we were each, you know, on opposite coasts. I'm on the East Coast and she's on the West Coast. And we were dealing with these unique challenges, unique to mothers with IBD. But when we got together, we realized that we had a lot of the same challenges that we were dealing with. And of course, that means that there are other moms in between us all across the country, and indeed all over the world, who are dealing with these things. And so we wanted women to understand everything, even before conception, we want moms and moms-to-be to understand how IBD affects this, affects their motherhood journey, and we want them to get the best start for themselves and for their babies. So that's been something that we've been doing for 2 years now. And that has also been a wonderful thing to birth and to watch that grow over time.
Can you repeat again where the listeners can find you? Is this a website, social media?
For IBD Moms? Yeah, IBD yes. Moms. We are IBD Moms on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and then our website is ibdmoms.org.
Great. I think that's amazing. I want to be a mom in the near future, and I hear a lot of stories of patients who have had an ostomy or a J pouch who still can get pregnant. So I have this C-section scar. I was laparoscopic surgery, so I have a small scar there and a Barbie butt. So I always wonder if it's possible for me to get pregnant and have the baby. So any information for me personally, I think it's amazing that you provide.
Well,
that.
We will hook you up. I will tell you right now, it's entirely possible for you to get pregnant. There is nothing preventing you from getting pregnant that has to do with IBD or having an ostomy. The rate of infertility is the same in people with IBD as it is for the general population. And I know several women who have had their babies vaginally or by C-section and live with an ostomy. So that's all there. And you are absolutely, completely welcome to join our group and we will hook you up.
Of course, I will definitely be looking into that. Thank you. All right. So to end today's podcast, it's always my favorite. There's a patient out there listening who doesn't know how to start being their own advocate. What advice would you give to them?
I think it's important to acknowledge that this is not an easy thing to do. So that's okay. It's okay to recognize that you need to start there. You have to give yourself a break because this is not comfortable to go in and question your healthcare team. When you're looking at your gastroenterologist who has had 13 years of schooling in order to get to that point, and then however many years they've been in practice, and sometimes you feel as though you don't have the right to ask certain questions. And it's just not to come, it just doesn't come naturally to us. But you have to remember that decisions about your care should be made together with your team. If you're not comfortable with how things are going, you have to ask yourself, why is that happening? And you need to bring that up with your team. If you don't like a medication, there's probably another choice. You just need to ask. If there are things that don't make sense to you, you absolutely should ask for an explanation. Even sometimes I have to point out to my team that I don't understand something and I need a little more time and maybe a little more explanation. And I joke sometimes that I'll be my doctor, and this goes for my GI and all of my doctors. They'll be standing there with their hand on the door. they're ready to leave. And I'm like, but wait, I have this one more thing. That definitely does happen to me, and it happens to me a lot that I kind of don't let them leave the room until I've gotten whatever key things that I need addressed. So recognize that this is hard, that this is uncomfortable, but it is something that you need to steel yourself and you need to go in and you need to be very open and honest with your team. And sometimes you need to ask them what you might consider to be a dumb question. But let me tell you, they would rather that you ask it than you not have the answer to it.
That doctor's appointment that you waited weeks for, scheduled, you waited in the waiting room, you're in your room waiting for the doctor, that's your time. You use that and take advantage of it, because there's many times where I would go, I wouldn't have any questions, it'd be a 5-minute visit, and I had driven 3 hours to get there. I waited 6 weeks to see my doctor, and I didn't ask anything. So I think that's probably one of the best tips that you could give a patient. Really, really take advantage of the time that
absolutely.
You have.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you a quick story that it did. You reminded me of it, that some of my team members are far away because I'm extremely particular with who I work with. I'm just that kind of a patient.
Me
so
too.
I had driven quite some ways to see someone. And unfortunately, I live in the Northeast. There's a beast called traffic. And I do the best that I can to mitigate that, but it just couldn't be mitigated that day. And I did walk into the appointment a few minutes late. And the receptionist looked at me and she said, "Well, you're a couple minutes late. Let me just check and see if they'll see you." No, that was unacceptable.
Oh, no.
And at that moment, I really had to step up to the plate and say, "No, I drove all of this way. There was a situation that was out of my control. I am not in the habit of throwing off someone's entire day because I'm late. Matter of fact, I'm usually early. But that's what happened.
Me too.
And they are going to see me today. And I'm going to be sitting right there and wait for you to call me back." And, you know, it was that uncomfortable. You're darn right it was. But I was not going to drive all the way home having waited for this appointment and done everything that I needed to do that day. Look, just to drive to an appointment with someone with IBD, that means that you're driving, you know, you have to pay attention to what you're eating. You have to, like, there's so many things that have to align. No way was I going to leave there without seeing her. And I did get in.
Oh, good.
Yeah, that was not going to happen. I was not leaving that day without, you know, seeing my care team. So yes, it's sometimes you just got to be that guy.
I've been that person as well. I'm always early, but yeah, I fight for something that is about my health and it affects my life. So that's what we're dealing with. We're dealing with our lives. So Amber, thank you so much for joining me today. You shared so much information. I mean, I learned a lot. I'm sure everybody else learned a lot. And I just enjoyed having you.
Thank you so much. It was so fun. I, of course, will always talk about the way back when of my diagnosis and talk about podcasting. So super fun for me. Thank you so much for having me on. And, you know, I hope we can connect again.
Yeah, me too. And if you guys want to continue to follow Amber's journey or listen to her podcast, she is on social media with her handle at About IBD, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much about it. Yep. And, you know, you can find the podcast everywhere, About IBD, in all podcast platforms. And yeah, I'm not too hard to find.
Great. Well, thank you for listening for this episode, and I will see you in the next. 11 Health's goal is to support, educate, and care for chronically ill patients with our Smart Care platform. To learn more about 11 Health and how to get connected with us, visit us at www.11health.com. You can also find us on our social media, Twitter and Instagram at 11 Health and Tech, and Facebook at 11 Health.